I'm recording. Absolutely.
So, one of the things, I guess I'll just start talking because I know I only have like a half hour.
Yeah.
One of the things I remember one of your earlier videos, you said a concept that really never hit me before. I think it was during when you were talking about suffering a lot. And it was like, well, if we're all the same stuff in the universe, do chairs suffer? And it's kind of a funny question you ask, like, I never thought about that. And I started dwelling that more. And I started thinking about physical pain and emotional pain. And if there's a difference between that. And there's something that you said a couple conversations ago. Remind me of her name. I think she was a therapist. It made me laugh because you kept talking and we're supposed to be the listener. But you said that consciousness was kind of like timeless. And yes. That kind of hit me because, you know, we can't relive physical pain in a sense that we can't think about our broken arm and feel that physical pain again. But the emotional pain is accessible. And I think that's very interesting. And I'm going to throw a bunch of concepts and I want your response because I'm trying to work out these thoughts together. But if it's accessible in the past, you know, you can think about a death of a loved one and instantly feel almost that same emotional pain as you once did. And that's interesting to me. And I think that kind of plays into this material versus story in a little bit. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but there's something very interesting that's going on there. And I haven't put words to those thoughts. But
no, that's really good. And I hadn't thought about it in that way, but you're exactly right. That it's the one of the difference between physical pain and emotional pain is that, you know, so I was talking about suffering quite a bit. That was probably during, you know, when my sister had died. And I was just reflecting on this, you know, as materialists, if you're a materialist, why would the death of a loved one be so painful? But, you know, to a degree that for some people, they would far rather endure physical pain than that emotional pain. What is that emotional pain?
That, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're exactly right. Can I butt in real quick?
Yeah,
keep going. I have another thing I want to tie in.
Yeah.
Another thing you said is very interesting. It was the same therapist I think you're talking to. You talked about how consent. I think we underlook or undermine consent. And that kind of plays into the access to consciousness too, the timeline, because there's things we regret and wish probably we could redo, and we have to live with those. And so I think you're right that our decisions are way more impactful than we think further down the line.
Yes.
Morality just doesn't hit us on that one. I mean, morality can have and we know this, but we don't really think about it enough when we make those decisions.
Right, right.
That fascinates me that you said that. I'm glad we had that conversation. It's very interesting.
Yeah. No, that's true. It's because the more you know, because all this consciousness talk just has me thinking about consciousness and kind of third personing myself so that I'm watching myself and saying,
right.
Well, that's, you know, this consciousness thing is a timeless thing. I remember when I was in college, my grandmother lived in the retirement community she lived in was just a walk away from where I was going to college. And I would visit her, and I remember one day she saying to me, she says, you know, inside I feel just like I did when I was your age. And here I'm looking at this woman who's, you know, pushing 90. And I'm, it's like, well, how can that be? Because you're an old person.
And, right.
But this consciousness is sort of timeless. This other concept of time that we have from clocks doesn't seem to live in this world. Because there are some times when the time goes slow. And then sometimes the time goes fast.
Right.
And so it's like, well, what is time?
Right. Yeah.
And what are we? And we have this dominant model that says, well, we're these creatures, we're these hairless apes who have big brains. And so, but that's not how I feel to be inside. And then we have the fact that you can sit there and play a computer game or take psychedelics or listen to music. You can do something which totally transforms the experience that you're having, and or even just when you sleep at night. Well, what are you then when you're dreaming? You know, this is totally weird, but we don't appreciate the weirdness of it.
No, we don't. You know, and to me, I mean, that is one of the evidences for God, for me at least, it's always been the consciousness. And that's just a whole rabbit hole of, you know, the naturalists will make their arguments and the theists or the non-naturalists will make their arguments. It's a, but instinctively it points me to God in my life, at least.
It's, you know, it's interesting because I've been doing a lot of thinking about the Verveke stuff. And so with Verveke, the point he makes with Galileo is that suddenly now with Galileo, we become alone in the universe as the things with consciousness. And when you see your dog, you say, well, the dog has a little bit of consciousness, and maybe some of these other animals that have two hemisphere brains have a little bit of consciousness, but we observe and watch and control and know and are agents in it. And so then our imagination of God then obviously is consciousness. And when, you know, Peterson talks to Bishop Barron, and you're listening to that, and that's exactly the trail Peterson is going down.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And to what degree are we thinking of God this way? Because this is the moment in time that this is what we're thinking about ourselves. So but most of the time we all get along just fine. Yeah. Not thinking a lot about any of this.
Right.
Crazy.
But it loops back into the chair thing, though, because the chair doesn't have I think we can almost objectively say the chair doesn't have consciousness.
I posted a conversation today. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Watch that one.
Okay.
I've had some shirtless, right? What's that?
Not the one where I show up shirtless, right?
No, not that one. That would be.
Oh, you're saying today, not yesterday.
Today, yeah.
No, I'm horrified of that video. I'm never going to watch it. Because
I've been having some great conversations. And so this is JP, who's a graduate student in philosophy. And so he's dealing with this physicalism of Verveke. So he's dealing with panpsychism, which I've really got my doubts because I really don't think that this can has consciousness. But anyway, it's an interesting thought experiment, which gets into your chair thing. Does your chair feel pain? And we have no reason to believe it does. And that gets into the question about living and non-living things. Because, you know, do trees feel pain? Well, we know if you prune a tree, it'll produce more fruit. Well, you know, we don't know squat about stuff. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And we think we're so smart. We really are not.
That is funny. That reminds me of an ethics class I took in college, and the teacher was saying, well, most animals have pain receptors, except fish. And I was like, all right, I'm killing all the fish then, because jokingly, but you know, do these, you know, you're right. Does the tree actually feel physical suffering, and how would we know? And I think that's a good point.
Well, and another conversation I just had with Mary, you know, Mary, who I've had a couple of conversations with.
Yeah.
She was talking about some science about how some of the latest science about how they think plants grow. And I mean, if you really study plants, it's way stranger than, especially most of us who live acidified life, know in terms of how plants battle each other. They compete for space. I mean, it's the world of plants is just bizarre, but we give it not a thought.
That's interesting. Huh.
Yeah. There's a lot of really cool conversations coming up I'm going to take a little pause in them for July because I have to figure out how I want to keep this going, but can still manage it with.
You're booked, man. You're booked.
Yeah. And I don't like that. Because, you know, here's a cool thing. I wish I had an hour with you because I'd love to hear your story, and you got some really cool ideas and you seem like a good guy. And so it's like, shoot, but how can I do this? And I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah. Well, let me bounce another concept off of just.
Go ahead.
So I've been thinking about this. I'm calling it transcendental gratitude. And I just made it up and I probably stole from someone. And I think it plays off of some stuff I've been hearing from you, but I kind of came to the point as, is it more psychologically advantageous to thank someone else for the success in your life? And I'll bring up an example of this job I just got, right? And I I'm always cynical of the people. Oh, thank God for this glass of water. Thank God for this glass that holds the water, you know, thinking. And I was like, okay, we get it. Like, you're, you know, but then I got this job and I thought, you know, I went to school. I got good grades. I got my diploma. I worked hard and I got this job. Is it advantageous for me to think that that's all on me, or is there someone out here that's giving me that opportunity? And I think psychologically it's better to push that emphasis on, for me, it's God, and instead of putting it all on myself. Because when I think about this, and I'm going to get into one other thing from this, but when I think about that, if I put all the emphasis on me and I fail at something, man, I beat myself up. We're hard on it. We feel guilty or whatever. At least for the successes in our life. Oh, I, you know, this is all on me. I could have tried harder, blah, blah, blah. Instead, if I transcend myself in this gratitude and give it to, you know, a lot of pantheists, the universe is saying this or this, kind of this God one, God two. I'm a Christian. I believe in Christ, divinity, and all that. But we'll just say God for now. It's like when I transcend myself and thank God for this job, and I do every day, it's like, you know what? If I get fired, maybe he has a plan in another direction. It's actually like it takes the burden off my back. Yes. I'm curious what you think about that.
Absolutely. It's absolutely.
Even if it wasn't a God, I think it's advantageous. Even if naturalism was true and atheism was true. Why is that? I mean, where can you tap into that? I'm curious about you.
Yeah, well, I think about C.S. Lewis's definition of praise or worship, which is inner health made audible. And this gets into Tim Keller. You know, Tim Keller has a lot of these little preacher phrases that he uses, but one of the observations that he uses often is kind of this aspect of understanding being saved by grace, that if it's a gift like this, you're naturally grateful for it. If it's something that you think you earned, you are both insecure with it because you know your own weaknesses, and you're self-righteous and you look down on others for it because they haven't done the hard work you've done. And so I think there is something deeply healthy psychological about exactly that. And that's part of the reason that I, you know, this came out in the last couple of sermons of mine, where I get into this, because I think it's deeply true. If I believe that the good things in my life are not simply achievements by me, I mean, that just puts all the pressure on me. But if I see them as gifts of God to me, well, just like you said, now if things start to hit a bad patch, I can say, well, God gave me good things, and sometimes they followed things that were tough. Maybe he's got something better for me. Yeah. And it's just a happier, healthier way to live, I think. It works for me.
Now, here's the funny thing. The contradictory part is, and I will be humbly admit that, yes, we do want control of our lives, right? I think I remember you saying in a couple of videos, you know, we're afraid of someone else actually being accountable of our lives or our actions. Yeah. We want it all in control.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason when we put this transcendental gratitude or whatever, whoever we think, I think that sets up a false narrative that we are in control when we really aren't. You know, I control my destiny. I messed up. It's on me, or blah, 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 blah. And it's funny because I actually think psychologically and internally, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would way rather have a divine, all-powerful being being in control than me. Now, I don't always love to that, but when I actually think about it, like, no, I don't want in control. I'll take it. You control my life, please. Right. You probably do a lot better with it than I would.
That's right.
And
that's
that's part of that is, you know, following Christ for me is like, oh, I would rather, I trust you much more than me. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
It makes perfect sense. Think about a three-year-old. If a three-year-old is in charge of their own life, that's a disaster. The parent who has perspective, wisdom, knowledge, insight, has far better understanding of the world, that's who should be in charge of that three-year-old's life. Now, compared to us and God, we're the three-year-old.
You're right.
And so it's much better to have a father in heaven. Now, this gets hard, of course, because when people – well, so much of this is difficult because if you sort of get it the other way around and you – this is where trust is so vital, because if you can't trust God – all of this stuff works in the opposite direction, and it squirrels down to hell.
I have something to add on to that. I'm glad you said that, because I think that trust, and this as a believer, and I'm curious, I don't think this means just to, for any human, it's the battle of temporal and eternal. And I think that's what you just said kind of reminded me of. It's confusing, man, to like be, my body's temporal, but I believe in an eternal afterlife. And I believe in, you know, I think this gets into idolatry too. Why are we so quickly to idolize physical things? Because they're physical. You think about Moses coming down, they already built a calf. Why'd they build a calf? They wanted something fit. I mean, it's this battle, and I feel it in my soul sometimes. Like, I don't even know what to be excited about sometimes. Like, I get guilty of like these little hobbies, like, well, this isn't gonna last. And you know, I don't know if you ever battle with that, but it's this temporal being, but it's like this eternal reality, and it's hard to really understand it at some point.
Well, one of the big things that I've been thinking hard about over the last number of months, I touched on it in the video I made about Jordan Peterson and Bishop Barron, and Dr. Jim from Idaho in the comment section nailed the time. He just put the timestamp on it. It's the whole comment. He just put the timestamp on it. But he was exactly right, because I'm working on. So you've got Gnostics that basically say the only thing that matters is the spiritual. Yeah. You've got materialists that say the only thing matters is the physical. Now Christians are in between. But what really, with from a Christian perspective, is the purpose of the material? What function does it play? And I think finally materiality is a medium for glory. And so part of the reason we get fixated on physical items is that, you know, the dollars in my bank account in some way are way more important than this dollar I keep sitting on my desk that I use for illustrations in my video, but I can touch this.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, if I decide to PayPal someone some money, you know, that's one thing. But with this, I can just give them this. There's a power to this that the spiritual doesn't have, the purely spiritual. And so there's something about incarnation. And so, I mean, I haven't by no means figured all this stuff out yet, but that's a lot of what I'm thinking about. And I think that's deeply into the split world that I'm trying to process in this whole Jordan Peterson journey of mine.
I think, yeah, that's a really good point. You know, for me, when I think about that, I think that transcending, I know that's such a, maybe you can make a fudgy word of transcending too. Maybe not, I don't know. But I think it's healthier too to transcend or, you know, praying, for instance, you know, when I get something physical, it gets old after a while. I mean, not always, but the excitement gets less and less and less and less. And that kind of points to me that I'm not just this temporal physical being, because when I pray, I think the advantage, especially if there is a God, which I believe, you have this all eternal being who you can feed into. And it's not just, it's not like he's going to break. He's not like a guitar that breaks. He's not like something physical that wears out. No, he's like, you can eternally transcend and tap out of. And that there's something there too that I don't know how to even put in words, but there's something that makes sense and that's objectively true about that, that we transcending this material world, not that the material is bad, but oh my gosh, it's so much more peaceful when I transcend and pray and think about others and serve outside of myself. And it's,
well, we're these weird creatures that are, you know, it's right in Genesis, we're the stuff of earth and the breath of heaven. And that's where we are. We're between two worlds. That's what human beings are. My dog is very much in this world. The plants are very much in this world, but we are the image bearers of God. And using, you know, that image bearing image is one that goes, has been taken in so many different ways. One of the ways, Gerhard von Rod in his commentary on the book of Genesis, you know, talks about, you know, the physical images in the ancient Near East. And so part of the reason Saddam had his image all over Iraq before the U.S. toppled him was that role. So he's present all over Iraq. And in a sense, part of what that image bearing is we are here on earth. And we are in a sense the priests between God and the rest of the creation. And Bishop Aaron actually talked about that in the conversation with Peterson too, and I thought Bishop Aaron spoke well about that.
I have not checked out the video.
Did you post the video's not out yet, only the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Peterson's behind. I don't know how his operation is working. The last video he posted, he basically said, I'm really behind because of my wife's condition. And I just thought, oh, number one, dude, you're making enough money. Give someone else the administrative tasks. But number two, you know, gosh, take care of your wife. I'm so...
What happened? Because I've heard he's been crying a lot lately and someone's been saying...
Well, his wife has cancer.
Okay, so that's...
And sure. It was first diagnosed as a fairly... as kidney cancer, which wasn't too serious, but then they discovered it was actually a very serious type of cancer that she's got. And so, my impression is, of course, I don't know him personally or anything, but just from the little bit that he's said, and the fact that she travels with him all the time, those two are a pair. And I think she's a huge part of his life and stability. And I pray for them every day because I really hope that she gets well and that they can continue, because, you know, a number of the appearances he made, he could barely talk and he keeps breaking down. And I think he's in a sense, and I completely understand that he doesn't want to break his routine because of this. That's one way to cope with what he's having to go through. But on the other hand, it's clear he deeply loves his wife and she's very important to him. And I pray every day that she is able to beat this cancer and that they can continue to enjoy what I think is a really fruitful relationship together. So,
yeah.
But I really want her to get well, because this is not good. So
that's terrible,
but we are about out of time and hopefully I'll have more slots and then we can talk for longer. And I think you would be great in a multi-slot too, because you're very quick and you pick up on things. You've got a lot of great insights. Well, you were organized. And I think back, I had a half hour slot with Peterson, but I was well organized. I had my notes ready to go and I knew how I wanted the conversation to go. And Peterson is a very famous rambler, so, you know, watch him and Ben Shapiro and
Shapiro's
first Sunday show, and it's like, you're going to do Jordan on your first Sunday show? It's like learning to ride on a bucking Bronco, is, you know, managing an interview with Jordan Peterson.
I couldn't imagine. Yeah, well, I'll keep open for open slots and let me know.
All right.
Sure, that'd be awesome. Thanks, though. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and I will send this to you.
You got it. Awesome.
Okay.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.